is the Youth Worker Collective podcast from Young People's Ministries. You don't have to be in ministry alone with resources, coaching, games, and more at umcyoungpeople.com.
Alive and well, Jeremy Steele.
Yes, we are. And we are coming out of the gate strong with our podcast this year. I'm going to be honest. I'm super happy about what we talked about last week, all of our like looking forward at where things are going in youth ministry. And then this week, we are talking about a topic that I have always found really interesting, which is the hidden messages behind your youth group games, right?
Yes.
Because there's the thing that you're doing, but you are always teaching something by the way you are doing things, right? Whatever it is that you, all these choices that you're making are making statements and teaching things about God, about Jesus, about Christianity. And so we're going to talk through today what those messages are, right?
Yeah.
So,
And a couple of the pieces, Jeremy, for me that are like kind of important in this discussion, right, are like there is a proud history of games in youth ministry.
Absolutely.
Honestly, if anybody watches anything that Jimmy Fallon does, basically anything
basically
on his late night show.
Hired youth pastors.
It was a youth group game 15 years ago. You know what I mean?
Right.
So there's this really sort of proud tradition and history of being able to do games in youth ministry. And it's not by mistake. The smartest educators and ministry leaders out there realize that maximum learning and maximum retention of whatever point you're trying to get across means maximum involvement by all participants, right? So
sitting
and listening to a sermon is not going to have as good of a retention for teenagers as something that actively reinforces a lesson that you're trying to get across, right? So games can be a huge and important part of how people do ministry. And like you and I have also experienced, some people do not put a lot of intentionality behind them and maybe don't realize sort of the hidden messages or behaviors that they might be reinforcing because of the games that they choose or how they set them up.
Yeah. And I think part of, I'm going to kind of stick with this like good side, like, the other thing is having fun together with people is a great way to build connections, to build relationships, all of that, right? And so it's important to not say like, oh, we don't ever want to play games. That's not ever the goal. But it's like everything, to think critically about the choices you make. And for me, sometimes it's like getting some sort of guidelines for myself when I'm thinking about stuff, so that I can just easily like rule out a bunch of things. One of the things that is really helpful for me, I was in you and I actually were together at this years and years ago. We were at a conference and we had this like really quick, like, sharing games segment where all the people in the room were like sharing the great things, the great games that they've been playing or whatever. And several of them involved food. And one person stood up and said, hey, you know, you guys can do what you want, but for us, we've made this decision. There are a lot of people that are going hungry in the world and in our community. And we don't want to waste food when people are going hungry. And I had heard that before, but I remember the first time I ever heard that, like, it's a revelation. You're like, oh, dang, you're right. That's not cool. Why would we do that? It doesn't match our values, right?
Yeah. And honestly, as kind of an extension of that recently, you know, if your church where you're serving has a lot of green initiatives or eco-friendly initiatives, looking at the games that you play, if they happen to use a lot of disposable materials, right? Like, especially stuff that can't be recycled or composted in any way, latex balloons, any kind of one-off thing. I love the way that you said it, Jeremy. If the setup of a game requires the use and, you know, disposal of things that are against your church's values, if you haven't had that conversation, good way to get into it, right?
And the other thing is, when you start sort of thinking this way about games, it can actually, once you limit yourself and start putting some boundaries, it can actually inspire creativity. We had that same, we said, we're going to stop doing food games, doing super wasteful games. And then we said, but we really like this. We really like this. So what do we do to change these around? And, you know, one of the things we realized, I was serving a church that, like, instead of having parents bring food, we had like a kitchen where we bought and prepared the food. And so a couple of times every year, we had to go through the pantry, go through the refrigerator, go through all the stuff and figure out like what was expired, what was about to expire, and throw away the stuff, which is just part of good stewardship of all your stuff and taking care of your kids. Well, what that meant though, is there was a bunch of stuff that we were about to like actually put in a garbage can that we could use for some weird game. And it would, and in our value system, using something that we were about to throw away instead of just throwing it away, actually really lived into our values. And we would note that we'd be like, hey, we're going to play this weird game with these bottles of ketchup. They expired. You're safe. Don't eat them. You're safe. But instead of just throwing away, we figured we'd just squirt them all over somebody's face, right? Or whatever it is. And it was a way for us to like live into our values without sacrificing all the things. But we would never have thought of that had we not said, we're not going to do this.
Sure, sure. And as a ministry leader and parent, I want to thank you for using the almost expired foods and not the ones that have been expired for like 3 years, right? Like there's a line somewhere in there.
But the question to me is, Cheese Whiz isn't actually food. It's really like a polymer. I mean, does it ever really go bad? I mean, that's a question you're going to have to answer for yourself. The other, but you know, if you kind of build on that, you know, one of the things that we are hoping, or at least I would hope that youth pastors are hoping, is that people will feel loved and accepted and encouraged. And sometimes we inherit practices from school or from our past without thinking about them critically. And it turns out that they actually make people feel unloved, not accepted, rejected, particularly in the way that you select teams for a team-based game, right?
Sure. We talked about that a little bit in our planning. And, you know, sometimes your group may complain if you're the one that's always setting up the teams or you're framing things in a certain way. But again, there's some intentionality to it. If you just open the door and say, okay, everybody pick teams for this activity, there are always going to be those kids who are picked last. If you forget to give the option for people to opt out of playing a game, right?
Yes.
They're going to feel excluded. They're going to feel like they don't want to play anyway. If you do give that option, there are good ways to be able to offer that option so that they're still present and helping in the game or participating with the group in some way.
How do you do that? That is a really frustrating thing to some youth pastors. They're doing games and some kids want to sit out and not play them. They feel like that's bad. It's not a good idea. So how is it that you do that? How do you, you said if you do it the right way, then they're still engaged. How do you do that?
Okay. So one of the right ways may be, you know, if you're playing a game that requires something with like inbounds, out of bounds, or enforcing certain rules, make those youth that don't want to be participants or players in the game, let them be refs, let them be coaches, let them be scorekeepers, right? Figure out different ways for them to still be active, even if they are not a player in the game itself, right? And that may be something that youth voluntarily opt out of. Also, one of the other pieces you and I talked about is, you know, physically, there may be games that you are creating or presenting as a youth leader that unintentionally excludes people because they are not physically gifted, right? Or they may have an injury. They may have a physical handicap of some kind that would prevent them from participating in the game. And that's not what you want to communicate as a youth leader, right? Bart Patton, who is friend of show and part of Perkins.
Love Bart.
And in Dallas, Perkins School for Youth Ministry, not the restaurant. I always have to say that for people that are not familiar with the school. Bart's got a great point about this. And, you know, what he says is when he's teaching about scope and sequence and the ministry of preaching and those kind of things, if you're setting up games where the odds are the person who wins that game is going to be the same kid who's kind of winning at life right now, right? Like the
at least the in adolescent subculture, right?
The one that's bigger or faster or more popular or any of those things, right? You're really doing a disservice to the gospel and a disservice to your group, because by setting up that game, you're reinforcing for the students that the world and the church are the same thing and operate under the same social standards or operate under the same kind of culture. And really, you want to be building a culture where people, to your point at the beginning, feel loved, feel included, feel accepted, have an opportunity to succeed no matter what their gifts are. So if you're always offering games that are just physical in nature, you are unintentionally excluding students who are better in your group about mental processing or emotional processing or those kinds of things.
Yeah, and I sort of build on that. There is this thing that can happen with people who are super competitive, and some games can just bring out this like weird toxic masculinity in some people. And you know, especially people who are, if you have people who are guests in your youth group, not really familiar with the culture. I saw this church camp and there was this guy, he was great. He was like star player on the basketball team at the high school. And he just showed up to this youth camp and they played basketball. And he was just like in people's face and doing all this stuff that makes sense on a varsity basketball team, maybe in high school, but like was not okay. And so my thing is that the closer you are to an actual competitive sport in the game that you're playing, the more likely you're going to have a host of problems. You're going to have exactly what you were talking about, people winning at that win at other things in life and all of that stuff. You're going to have people, people who are really good at certain sports will feel like this competitiveness at a real sport and like a personal injury when they lose at a level that is just over the top for a youth group game. I was at a dodgeball thing. Somebody had actual dodgeball. It was like actual dodgeball.
Oh no.
And like there were kids who were crying at this game because some of them were like super sportsy and they lost and they were really involved in it. And there was a youth worker who was playing on a team and just was really good at dodgeball and just nailed people. He was this deciding shot in a bunch of, and like, it really hurt their feelings that this guy like just eliminated them. But the thing is like, it doesn't have to be that way, right? If you're going to do that, if you dial back from the actual sport in different ways, in important ways that make it basically, nobody can really be good at this. Nobody can really be bad at this. We can just have fun together with this. All of a sudden, like, it becomes a lot easier. So, like, if you're going to try to play dodgeball with marshmallows, maybe?
Sure.
Or that's the food thing. Or Nerf balls or whatever. If you're going to try to play baseball, use a spatula instead of a bat or, like, you know, whatever. But just ways to make these games less of the sport. One of my favorite games I've ever seen a group play was, it was like baseball, but it was in the summer. They were using Nerf balls, spatula, but they had slip and slides to each base, right? and then the base was a kiddie pool, one of those inflatable kiddie pools. It was a ton of fun. Nobody was really care. Like, no, at the end of the game, nobody even knew what the score was.
Yeah.
You were just having fun. And that's really what you want to do. Try to find a way where like the score ends up not mattering. Once the score really doesn't matter, then it helps you a whole lot.
Yeah. You know, there's other pieces that made me think of. Some of it is how teams get organized, right? Like if you've got a group that is always like, oh, let's do girls versus boys, you know, and you're playing a physical sport, again, you're going to reinforce some stereotypes or some differences that you may not want to reinforce. Even if let's say you're at a retreat or camp and somebody's like, all right, it's all guys and we're doing shirts versus skins, right? Like, there's going to be some discomfort among some participants with that setup, right? It makes me think of some of the games that you and I may have played when we were in different youth groups that we would not play anymore because of inappropriate physical boundaries, right? Like if you ever played that, a game where you have to pass an orange in between a circle or along a line by not using your hands. So you go like neck to neck, right, with other people, or you've got toothpicks in your mouth and you're passing a lifesaver down the line. Same kind of thing, right? It's this, or honey, if you love me, won't you please smile?
Oh, right? I was just about to say that one. That's the one.
Classic one that would really be a no-no right now. It's worth a lot of thinking
about.
Should
have been a no-no then. It was not good.
Yeah, it was a different kind of game. The last thought.
There was another one. Do you remember the cold spoon on the string that you went inside your clothing?
I do.
And wove it up and down and then took it out. I don't understand. I don't know what the people were thinking who made the games.
The last thought that I may lift up for our particular conversation today is, this is a bit more of a personal preference, but I do always love when there is some kind of link from the game to your lesson is going to be, right? Those of you that have led ministry for a long time know that if you're doing like a super hyper game and you play it for about a half hour and, you know, everybody's out of breath and wound up and super excited, it's difficult to then sit down and be like, okay, now we're going to calmly read from the Gospel of John, right? It just, that whiplash of playing this game to an unlinked lesson or to a scripture or, you know, topic that really had nothing to do with the game that you were playing is always tough for me. So I always appreciate when people can take the extra time to try to link whatever the physical activity is that they're playing in their game along with the lesson that they're trying to get across. So, you know, in my mind, that means not always playing the game at the same time. I know a lot of youth groups will lead with the game as the first sort of, you know, we're all going to get together and be goofy sort of an activity. It's okay to mix it up sometimes, have the game in the middle or have the game at the end as a way to reinforce the lesson that you're teaching or the Bible verses that you're exploring or any of those kind of things.
Yep. And that's just the key to the whole thing. It's just be intentional. Be thoughtful with all the different aspects. And it doesn't, you don't have to go and take a seminar on the theology of games. Just as you're planning, think about this. Or if you offload this to another volunteer, say, hey, here's the things I want you to think about as you're planning games. Try to make them connect to our topic, try to make them not real elements, like not actual sport games and all of that. And then, you know, just do as many fireworks as you can.
One of my favorite features of, you know, the way that Zoom does stuff now is you accidentally can like thumb up yourself or be like, I just made a really excellent point. Way to go. You know, like it's really pretty great. Jeremy, thanks as always for the conversation. Those of you that were watching on Facebook Live, we appreciate the ministry that each of you lead. Reminder that you can find recorded and archived versions of the Youth Worker Recharge on umcyoungpeople.org. along with a whole bunch of other worship resources and articles from a variety of youth workers around the world that are really there to help support and challenge you in leading your ministry. Jeremy, thanks again. I can't wait till we get to do this again next week.
See you next week.